Now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is more than one way to look at something. Each of my guests is showing us that there's more than one way to view their particular subject. My next guest is an historian who has a fascination with the Chinese immigrants to California. We'll discuss the rich and unique history of the Chinese in California. Hannah Claiborne was born and raised in Oakland. She's a professional historian, a writer, an editor, and she's lived in the San Francisco Bay Area her entire life. She really ought to get out more. Earning her undergraduate degree in anthropology and psychology, she's got a graduate degree in history. She went on to serve as the director of four history museums in the Greater Bay Area. She has published historical books and articles on the towns of Bloomfield and Healdsburg, and she's edited more than 100 pictorial histories of California cities and towns. She currently is editing a new history of Walnut Creek, California, where she lives with her husband and two children. Welcome to the show, Hannah. How are you today?
Hi, Billy. How are you?
Well, doing terrific. Thank you so much for coming on the show and being my subject matter expert. And I have to say right off the bat, your pictorial history of California, the Chinese in California, it's a beautiful book. It's a coffee table book. Very well done. So kudos to you for that.
Well, thank you. And that's one of the reasons that I was anxious to do the book when it was proposed to me, is that the production values are so high with this book. And it really, the subject deserves it.
It absolutely does. All right, so let me set the stage for my listeners if I can. In the years between the California Gold Rush, which started in 1848, for those of you who were asleep during history class, and 1882, more than 75,000 Chinese nationals came to California.
That's right.
Early residents were known as Gam San Hak, which translates from Chinese into guests of the Gold Mountain.
That's right.
So what made the Chinese stand out from the other immigrants of the same time, Hannah?
Well, so many people were streaming in, but it's important to note that because the ships that were on the Great Trade Circle that landed in China to get all of the wonderful trade goods there in Guangdong Province, that news of the gold rush traveled by ship. We have to remember, everything traveled by the water. And those were some of the first people to hear about the gold rush, even before the people on the East Coast. So it did start as a trickle of about 500 by 1850, but soon there were almost 75,000 immigrants here and prior by 1870. And they were more noticeable than other groups, mainly because of the darker skin and what seemed to Californians as exotic or oriental dress. So they stood out. And at first, there was very little discrimination. It wasn't until the 1870s when there were so many other types of immigrants. And I'm Irish myself, by the way. And when I say this, the Irish immigrants greatly began to resent the Chinese workers that had spread throughout California because they felt that they were taking jobs away from them. This is a common recurring theme in California history, a shortage of labor and not enough jobs. And so initially, during the early period, the Chinese were basically omnipresent throughout the state.
And what makes it interesting to me, Hannah, is that the Chinese, unlike your ancestors, the Irish or the Germans or any other immigrant group that came to California, the Chinese really stood out because they adhered to their customs and to their attire throughout the entire time. So I found that that was rather interesting. Whereas the Irish, the Germans sort of assimilated, they had Western clothing and so forth. The Chinese really were not part of the melting pot at the time. They were more like the salad. They were croutons on the salad of California life.
Well, I mean, partially, and yes, you're right, but partially because with the Exclusion Act of 1882 and the ghettoization, the gilded ghetto of the Chinatowns throughout California, they were kept separate. I mean, in a way, yes, they had very strong cultural ties to their homeland, but the new land that they came to actually kept them excluded. And although it wasn't intended, it did help to preserve that culture. That's one of the great things about this generation of Chinese, is that they have kept their culture much more and their cultural background than many of the other ethnic groups.
My guest is Hannah Claiborne. We're talking about historic photos of the Chinese in California, her latest book. And Hannah, what was the feeling of most Americans towards the Chinese from the late 1880s through the early part of the 20th century?
Well, you know, Billy, that's what started me on this fascination was my first study while I was in college was of a little ghost town out in Sonoma County, north of San Francisco. And although there was nothing written about the Chinese in that town, what I discovered by talking to some of the older residents is that they had basically done the majority of the heavy agriculture in that town for a generation, for almost 30 years. And yet, there was nothing written about them. So the attitude, you know, at the time that they were being used, I say used because they were not being paid very much for working on these very large farms, which were almost similar to the size of plantations in the South, was that they were very much needed. But after the 1870s, there came about one of the, I think, the most extreme discrimination campaigns that has ever existed, at least that I have ever come across in our state or nation. And it was virulent. And there were so many people supporting the anti-Chinese movement that you wouldn't expect, like Luther Burbank. I don't want to be pointing fingers at people that we usually respect and consider, but it was one of those movements that had so much power behind it, and it was so virulent, and you know, there was so much violence also connected to it, especially in the 1870s and 1880s.
And that is a unique characterization of it. I mean, it went so far as to actually become a law. There was a U.S. law, the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Well, the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, basically, I mean, it's very complex, and there were many levels to this law and additions to it. But what it basically resulted in was that most Chinese men could not bring over Chinese wives. It basically created an upper class of Chinese merchants, or sometimes known, we call them aristocrats, that could have wives and families. For instance, in San Francisco's Chinatown, only the very wealthy were able to have families. The rest of the population, and Billy, you understand that there was, by about 1885, there was like 22,000 people living in 12 square blocks of San Francisco's Chinatown,
Mostly
single males. So it created an unnatural culture that actually encouraged crime, prostitution, obviously, opium smoking, although we don't like to bring that up as a given of the Chinese community. It was most rampant when there was that unnatural limit on bringing women in, and as soon as they were able to bring in wives, beginning after, that's kind of a long story, but after about 1906, they basically had a normalization of the culture that began to you'd see the disappearance of prostitution, opium smoking, and basically the bringing on of our middle class.
All right.
Should have happened much earlier, but was delayed because of those laws.
Well, Hannah, and just to be fair, opium at that time was also legal and available over the counter to white Americans, anybody who really wanted it. It was just in different forms. It was not smoked.
Right.
But
laudium,
it was in liquid. Right. Yeah, laudium is being one of the great examples of
that. Yeah, and you know, I have uncovered, that's why I love photographs. It's one of my favorite artifacts, because photographs don't lie, and they don't need, they do need interpretation, but I did find some interesting photographs of white middle-class opium smokers. Unfortunately, I didn't get them for the book. But but it wasn't only the Chinese even smoking opium, and you're right. Respectable middle-class women were taking laudanum.
Well, my guest is Hannah Claiborne. She's the author of the book Historic Photos of the Chinese in California. And Hannah, you talked about the violence against the Chinese, the discrimination against the Chinese, particularly in the late 1870s, 1880s.
Mm-hmm.
By the 1880s, Chinese had left the town, one of the towns that you were researching, Bloomfield,
mm-hmm.
because of crimes against them. Tell us why they left Bloomfield. I think that'll give our listeners a sense of the type of violence that was being perpetrated against them.
Yes. Well, there's famous incidents in both San Francisco and Los Angeles, which resulted in many deaths of the Chinese immigrants there, residents there. But I like the example of Bloomfield because this was something that has never been recorded except in the oral history of this small town. And this kind of describes the process that has relegated the early history of the Chinese in the state to the shadows. And I began to interview residents, and they were telling me tales of their grandfathers, their fathers and grandfathers, talking about these Chinese workers that had existed there for a generation. And when asked about, well, where did they go? You know, why didn't they still need them? They told me about a very serious incident where some members of the town, you know, I could guess about their ethnicity, being that I'm Irish, or other workers who needed those jobs, poisoned the well of the Bloomfield agricultural workers. According to oral history, 17 died, and those that weren't dead were driven out all in one night. And this is a story, a legend, you could call it, but there is some truth to it, I'm sure, about how they drove the Chinese out of that one little town. Now, none of those accounts appeared in the history books because by the 1880s, when the first Sonoma County, for instance, histories were being published, sentiment against the Chinese was so strong that they were basically being written out of history. You know, that generation of Chinese workers was never mentioned once in any of the county histories. So that's just one example. You know, and I'm sure it happened in many, many towns up and down the state in rural counties, maybe not so violent as that, but they were driven out or forced out.
Yeah, it's an incredible story. My guest is Hannah Claiborne. Hannah, without a doubt, Chinatown in San Francisco is the undisputed capital of the Chinese, mm-hmm. at least in California, possibly in all of America. Did you know that Ventura, the town that you're broadcasting into, has its own Chinatown? It was called China Alley, straight across from Mission San Buenaventura, right down
yeah.
there. And living conditions for the Chinese in general were pretty miserable. They were living in shanties and that kind of stuff. Even in Chinatown, you talked about it earlier, they called it the Gilded Ghetto. Why is that, and why did it take so long for the Chinese middle class to emerge?
Well, Billy, I did want to agree with you that there were many, many Chinatowns, Los Angeles, you could almost name any large town that was close to agricultural or railroads probably had a Chinatown. And, you know, I've been in so many towns that claim they didn't have any Chinese there. And by digging the way I dig, you know, I can find that they certainly did. They just didn't know about it. But and I'm sure Ventura had one.
Yes.
But San Francisco's was special. San Francisco, I'm telling you, had such cultural intensity all distilled in that one neighborhood. I told you that you know, in 12 square blocks, there was up to, at one point, 22,000 people living there. And you can imagine how crowded the conditions were. But still, you know, much of the beautiful aspects, wonderful aspects of Chinese culture were evident there. So almost from the very beginning, artists and photographers loved to go there, and tourists. And I would have to say that there was a mixture of fascination and fear for most whites during that period about the Chinese culture, basically because they were ignorant about parts of it. But there was also a fascination with the beauty of it. So therefore, San Francisco's Chinatown is very well documented, whereas a lot of these other ones that we're talking about, like Ventura's, are only less documented. We don't have as many pictures of them.
Ah, my guest is Hannah Claiborne, author of the book Historic Photos of the Chinese in California. And Hannah, of all the research you did and all the photos that you saw, what stood out to you as being most remarkable?
Well, of course, I'm greatly affected by the photographs of the women. And every culture has at some point kept women in certain forms of slavery or servitude. But I know that the one picture, the real picture that I found of a Chinese slave girl affected me. And then another photograph that is so poignant, Weeks before the San Francisco earthquake, an artist photographed DuPont Street, which is the Grant Avenue now, Main Street in old Chinatown, San Francisco, and did it at night in the half fog so that it almost looked like an impressionistic painting. That was the old Chinatown that in 1906, of course, because of the earthquake, was completely destroyed. So those two photographs stand out in my mind. That one, just because it recorded in such an artistic way something that is completely gone now.
Oh, that is amazing. My guest has been Hannah Claiborne, author of the book Historic Photos of the Chinese in California. Hannah, if people are interested by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
There's always Turner Publishing, which you can go up to the Turner Publishing website, turnerpublishing.com, and find the book. It's also available on Amazon and at Barnes & Noble, and online in many places. If you just Google that that name, you can find it available in many of the major bookstores. And you can also, I Google pretty well my own self, Billy, so you can just put my name up there, Hannah Claiborne, and find several different projects I've done and other information.
Perfect. Oh, that is great. And, of course, you can also get the book at our own independent Bank of Books bookstore here in Ventura. Two locations to serve you, 748 East Main Street and 2682 East Main Street. Hannah, it's been a delight. You're a great storyteller. Thank you so much for being my guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain.
Well,
we'll talk to you down
Billy.
The road.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.